Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast from the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Carter, and this is your daily dose on all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Wednesday, hump day, getting through the middle of the week with you guys. Thanks for joining the show. If you like the show, please hit the subscribe button. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well as Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts are hosted. But today, we're continuing the Ultimate Division Crossover Week with a focusing show on the Bengals. Going to be a fun show with those guys in a little bit. But before we do, I am going to take the time to address this narrative that continues to persist in the national media regarding Ben Roethlisberger. I have to do it. I'm just tired of hearing it. It started with, it started years ago, but who cares? The most recent starting of this narrative came from a Brett Gannon of Bleacher Report with this nonsensical story about how Ben Roethlisberger is washed up. He's done. The Steelers should give up for him. He wrote an article saying it's time for the Steelers to cut ties with Big Ben and find a quarterback in 2020 free agency. In this article, he argues that Ben Roethlisberger's health regimen is different from other older quarterbacks who are succeeding, like Tom Brady and Drew Brees. He goes into how the Steelers have had problems with Ben Roethlisberger and how he hasn't been as much of a Pro Bowler in recent years. He goes into how expensive Ben Roethlisberger is as far as the Steelers' salary cap. And he gives his reasons why the Steelers should give up on him now and maybe invest in a Teddy Bridgewater or any of the other many wild card free agent quarterbacks that are floating around, like Ryan Tannehill, or maybe even investing into a quarterback into the draft for them to become the immediate starter. Like that didn't just work. Like that didn't just fail with Mason Rudolph. Then there was Chris Canty, a former NFL player on Fox Sports 1, who continued this narrative, pushing this idea that Ben Roethlisberger's washed up and that he's done and the Steelers need to give up on him. What in the world are these people thinking? Listen, I understood that there was a divide in the national media, the people that aren't inside the locker room for the Steelers last year when they were talking about, well, who's to blame? Antonio Brown, Big Ben. I understand that being a conversation if you're not around the team, even if you were around the team, there was debate. And there were times where you could say, you know what, Ben maybe misstepped here and there. He did things that you wish he shouldn't have. But as far as giving up on him, are you crazy? This is Ben Roethlisberger. The guy responds to adversity. If anyone else in the league, you know, as far as these old quarterbacks, and Ben is old, he's 38, he's coming back from an elbow injury, that's a legitimate concern. But if there's anyone, if you look at Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees and Tom Brady, I guess, is the exception because he has his super trainer and he doesn't eat tomatoes or whatever he does. But Ben Roethlisberger, his entire career has been built on toughness, on bouncing back, on resilience, and on his ability to find ways to win despite the odds against him. That's what the Steelers are betting on. That's why he has the contract that he has, and that's why they're not just going to bail on him because he had a rough injury towards the end of his career. You're at least going to give that guy the chance to fight back and prove that he can win again. That's why the Steelers shouldn't give up. And I get it. A lot of people are tired of certain players. And if you're a guy from the national media and you're trying to get on that side, I get it. You want to be part of it, but you know, maybe you're a guy like Chris Canty. You played for the Ravens. Maybe you're just tired of seeing him because Ben Roethlisberger was just too good for too long. And you want to see that era end. I understand that. A lot of Steelers fans feel that way about Tom Brady. But you don't go and just imagine, you know, you're kind of, I think this is more wishful thinking from people that aren't part of either Steeler Nation or cover the Steelers intensely. I think these are just people outside their locker room that are just kind of like, you know what, I'm just going to get a hot take in here while I can. There's an old quarterback I can pick on. He had an injury. I'm going to be out in front and say that this big thing should happen and hope that maybe this old quarterback will have another injury and prove me right. But please, go somewhere else with that. There's, you know, this is stabbing in the dark. This is hoping for a wild thing to make your career, to make yourself look good. It's anyone that knows when they have a franchise quarterback knows that you got to give that guy the chance to improve. You got to give the guy a chance to bounce back. And you don't just give up on a player like that because there's no guarantee. You know, if the Steelers did that right now with Mason Rudolph, they'd be in a lot of trouble. I think, you know, everyone saw that last year. Now, granted, if the Steelers were able to magically recoup all the money that they spent on Ben Roethlisberger, I'm sure they could go out and find a quarterback and be competitive with that quarterback. But that's not happening right now. Ben wants to prove himself. He wants to play, which means he's not going to retire, which means they're going to have to pay his salary. If you cut the guy, you'll cut ties with Ben Roethlisberger. The cap hit would be ridiculous. You'd only save about $8 million, and that's not enough to go get another quarterback, let alone help you and fix other parts of the roster. No, the answer right now for the Steelers is to stick with Ben Roethlisberger and not to put all the weight on him. And you guys have heard me on this show several times advocate to avoid making Ben Roethlisberger chuck the ball around too much. I think that they should invest in the running game, the offensive line, give Ben Roethlisberger a balanced offense to be able to call and understand how to attack defenses with different ways, you know, run the ball, catch them off guard this way. Then when they're playing the run, throw over their heads with a play action. Do old school Steelers football, the things that made him successful in his young days. Don't force him to try and air it out too much. And I think if they do that, they won't need the Ben Roethlisberger of the past 5 years when he was slinging the ball over the place with Antonio Brown. They'll just need good old Big Ben to go back, make the smart and tough plays, and come in the clutch when they need him because they're relying on a great defense and hopefully a strong ground game. But none of that happens if you just give up on him, chuck him to the side, and say, we'll go with somebody else this year. And the Steelers won't do that because they're a very strong organization that knows what they're doing. So, got that off my chest. Figured I'd give you guys some Steeler rantisms. I don't do a whole lot of rants on this show. I was just tired of that nonsense. But we got a good show today with this Ultimate Division crossover. Jake is leading the way with the Bengals. I'm gonna come in later in the first segment. I was coming off of filming another show for DK Pittsburgh Sports, so it takes me a little bit to join. But stick around. I think you'll enjoy some of the conversations, and I don't really hold back in this one. In the Steelers show, I wanted to be polite. You know, I'm asking them questions. They're answering them. You give them a chance. I kind of had enough with some of the antics of, you know, especially the Bengals guys. So I was like, you know, let me let loose a little bit here. Hope you enjoy it. But before we get into that, a quick break. All right, listen up, guys. You know you guys can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed with Blue Chew. And that's BlueChew.com and blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. That's F-R-E-E, free. When you use our special promo code NFL, just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code NFL to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Good people, we are back together. The whole happy family of the AFC North, more like dysfunctional family. Really far away from the Brady Bunch. None of us like each other, but hey, we're doing the AFC North Ultimate Crossover. We're here with Kevin, Jeff, Joe's here today. Chris is coming from Locked On Steelers. The whole gang is here, and you might have noticed the last couple days, we're following a format of talking about the 2019 season in retrospect first, getting into the 2020 season. We Bengals fans don't really care to talk about the 2019 season. We saw a rookie head coach come in from a Super Bowl loser, have a really tough time getting things going in Cincinnati, lost AJ Green before the season started. So Kevin, the question I think I'm going to ask to reflect on the 2019 season for the Cincinnati Bengals for you as a Ravens guy, how happy were you to not face AJ Green this year? What kind of difference do you think he could have made to this team?
AJ Green, a phenomenal receiver, and he has been pronounced and really dubbed in Baltimore circles the Raven Killer, and for good reason. AJ Green, it seems like every time he suits up to play against the Ravens, absolutely kills them. I mean, I'll go back to a few years ago. He caught that Hail Mary right as time expired, forced overtime. He's just a player that you can't really underestimate his value, and you can't really say, you know, the impact that he has is just tremendous, and him being a free agent this year is so unfortunate with the injuries that the Bengals had this season. And even going back to last season, I mean, Billy Price misses the year, and then this season, Jonah Williams. I mean, it's just like the Bengals can't catch a break, and then Andy Dalton doesn't perform well. AJ Green doesn't play a game, and Tyler Boyd, you know, in their games against the Ravens, he was locked up by Marlon Humphrey. It had to be a few other guys that stepped up for them. It just really seemed like the Bengals just couldn't catch a break. And with the AFC North and all the stuff that was going on with Baltimore, I think AJ Green could have made a tremendous, tremendous, just a tremendous type of player and a tremendous type of guy to have on the field for Cincinnati during the season. And when you look at the Bengals 2-14 record, you look at how they played, there were some spurts and there were some sparks that I saw out of Cincinnati. Joe Mixon was hot and cold, but towards the end of the year, he tore it up. Again, the Bengals trying to see what they have in Ryan Finley. And is that the option for the Bengals? We're going to talk about Joe Burrow a lot on this show today. I don't think Ryan Finley is the option for Cincinnati. But overall for the Bengals, a disappointing season. Now, did anybody expect them to go out and win the AFC North? Probably not. I certainly didn't. But I think that people underestimated the Bengals. And yeah, they were a 2-14 team, but a lot of potential to be had heading into the offseason.
So you talk about Joe Mixon, and I agree. I think he was one of the best running backs in the league for the last 8 games of the year. But was there anybody who surprised you in a good way for the Bengals? You're watching from afar. Is there anybody that maybe you hadn't heard of before that now you're thinking, I'm going to have to watch this guy going forward?
Let me tell you, Auden Tate. All right, a guy who I had never heard of before heading into the Ravens' first matchup with the Bengals, absolutely torched the Ravens in that first matchup. The Bengals were targeting Maurice Kennedy quite a bit, and the Ravens had secondary issues, injuries throughout the entire season. And Kennedy was a guy who was asked to step up. He was primarily a slot cornerback, was playing on the outside. And Auden Tate absolutely worked him the entire game. Now, in the second game, didn't do as much, but I think that's because the Ravens actually game planned for him. Auden Tate, a guy who was huge, can win at the point of attack, catch those jump balls. I mean, he's 6'5", 228 pounds, has surprising speed for that size, surprising quickness, and he's only 23 years old, a seventh-round pick in 2018. If I had to really focus in on one player, it really would be Auden Tate for me. And with AJ Green hitting free agency, as I talked about, I think that Cincinnati has a solid guy here in Auden Tate. And I think when you look at the Bengals and their outlook for 2020, he's a guy who I would expect and hope for the Bengals to involve more.
Yeah, I like that, Kevin. I remember we talked about him during the season, and I think that's why the Ravens went out and got Marcus Peters after he torched Kennedy the way he did. And, you know, you see the Ravens couldn't hide him any longer. But I want to switch it over to Jeff and the Lockdown Browns. Obviously, the Bengals are picking number one, and that's our complete focus and discussion. But the Browns have a lot of experience in that situation, I guess, and especially recently. What do you remember from when the Browns picked number one, I mean, with Garrett and with Baker? And how do you see any comparisons or similarities or differences here?
Oh, well, first things first, Kevin, thanks for pumping Jeff's draft brand when I tried to tell everybody, don't worry about Auden Tate's 40 time. How are you going to cover 6'4.5", 230 pounds? Unless you have a ladder, you're not going to be able to cover.
Right, right.
Pleasant surprise. And but as far as the overall being having the number one overall pick, and I had mentioned this a little bit to Jake last night, you know, off air, you know, obviously the first year in 17. It's what you were, okay, let's go get a quarterback. But what are you putting him into? Now, you look at that situation. You know, quarterback, how is it going to succeed? There wasn't playmakers. There weren't any. You look at Myles Garrett and you say, you know what? At least he's going to come in and he's going to dominate as a pass rusher from day one. So at least we have a surefire thing. And what's that going to do? It's at least going to give you a shot on defense. And you look at that 17 season. And there were games that they were close, and then eventually, you know, the breaks beat the boys because you can put up, couldn't put up enough points. Then we went through, you know, the 18 draft process. And, you know, this is where it's a little different for, obviously, for Joe and Jake. It seems like a slam dunk here. I mean, it seemed like a slam dunk before they even gave out the Heisman as far as who's going one overall. And for us, it was, you know, and because there were numerous quarterbacks and they were mentioned, and we went through the entire process, and it wasn't until about 24 hours before the actual draft that we knew it was going to be Baker Mayfield. But it's fun to cover. It's, you know, and for Cleveland, it's not many times that the Cleveland Browns are, you know, the top story of the NFL. Maybe for bad reasons, but, you know, there's not many times where the Cincinnati Bengals are a top story of the NFL. You are right now. You are holding the number one overall selection. Granted, maybe it seems a little dim because it already seems predetermined, and maybe it also seems like this draft starts at pick number three. But who are you guys kidding? You're excited. You're stoked. This guy literally just put together, in my opinion, what was the greatest quarterback season in college football. And, you know, people can say, oh, well, this, all of that. Yeah, well, go down and do it in the SEC. Go down and do it and go have to do it through 15 games. And literally just get better as it goes on. It's fun for a franchise. And, you know, everybody talks about tanking. And I don't think anybody thought the Bengals were going to be a team that was going to tank. And I don't think they really ever did in this year. If you really want to look at it, you know, as much as I want to talk about the job Flores did with Miami, you got to think there's some people in that front office like, well, man, we really thought we were going to be picking one overall. Congratulations on winning, you know, four or five games. But, man, we thought we were going to be picking one overall with all these assets we have. But it's fun because, look, you know, what you hope for is if it didn't work out and you put together 2-14 season is we are going to select the difference maker. And you put in the fact that he's an Ohio kid and there's roots there, Skyline Chili, whatever it means, who cares? You need the player. So it's a fun process to get to cover this because, you know, for the Bengals, obviously, guys, way before podcasts, for me with the Browns, we ain't talking about Super Bowls. So what can we turn into a Super Bowl-like performance is covering getting to have the number one overall selection and being excited about it and having the juices flowing about it.
Jeff certainly knows a lot about what it's like to be where the Bengals are now, so we appreciate that perspective. But now we go to Chris, and Chris, we talked, I think, a couple of days ago, or maybe it was off air, about how the Bengals scooped up William Jackson one pick ahead of you guys where you went for Artie Burns. Did it feel good to get that revenge? I mean, we talked yesterday about how the Steelers spent all this capital. They moved up last year in the draft to get Devin Bush, and then they went out and traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick. No one's sure about Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, was it how much of that was, I want to get payback for the Bengals sniping our picks the last few years, and how much of that was, you know what, Devin Bush is just our guy?
That was zero about the Bengals. First of all, the Steelers aren't really worried about the Bengals. They haven't really been worried about the Bengals. Even when the Bengals were good, they knew that if the Steelers were having a good year, they'd be able to beat them when it counts. I mean, 2015 playoffs, you know, even when you had everything in your hands and you had Landry Jones in the field, still found a way to throw that game away. But in all seriousness, Devin Bush was their target from the jump, and they kind of were hinting at it. You saw them appearing at every event that he was at, every meeting that he was at. He was exuding the kind of character they wanted, a leader. They wanted a guy that knew the defense and knew how to call plays, knew how to fly sideline to sideline. That's what they were missing on their defense. And without Ryan Shazier, that was the bottom line. You know, it's just, when you took him as the X factor out of the defense, they became a completely different group, and that's why they lost ultimately to the Jaguars, because they had no answers in the middle of the defense, and the Jaguars were just able to pick on everything. With Devin Bush, that was purely them stepping up, making their moves. And I think the Steelers are finally committing to realizing the big thing is that everyone is hyped off of Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, can he throw 5,000 yards? And that's not what they're going to be going for. anyone that watches the Steelers, anyone that studies them knows that the only times they've won the Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger is when their defense was number one, and they want to get their defense back to maybe being in that direction. And I think you have a great X factor in Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think Devin Bush had a spectacular first year as far as how he played. I think he had the eighth most tackles of all time as a Steeler in his rookie season, and he was 21 years old. He's pointing upwards in a major way. So I think that was a major win. Fitzpatrick was a major win. Were they at the time probably peeved that the Bengals spent a first round pick on a cornerback when they already had two first round cornerbacks on their roster at the time? Yes, probably. And they ended up sticking with Artie Burns, which turned out to be a complete bust. But ultimately they knew that they could survive that, and that the Bengals picking a player in spite of the Steelers, or to spite the Steelers, would backfire. And I mean, ultimately, that version of the Bengals flamed out, whereas Burns hasn't helped them, but they've been able to kind of rebuild their defense. And Devin Bush is absolutely a part of this defensive nucleus. I fully expect the Steelers, this next generation that goes into this next decade, whenever Ben does retire, if it's next year, if it's 2 years from now, they're going to be expecting the defense to carry them, and to carry while they work with the ground game, and maybe like just a half decent quarterback. I think it's important to remember Ben Roethlisberger, when they won their two Super Bowls, he was not a top five quarterback in those years. He was more like, middle of the league, but still young and prosperous. I think if they just get a young hot guy, or a guy that can carry the load and make a couple big throws, that's what's gonna propel the team enough. They want to win with defense now, and I think that they're happy with that.
I think it was a vengeance pick. I think that it
nobody's thinking about y'all. The Bengals, you're gonna fold no matter what.
I hear what you're saying, and you're wrong, and it's because
that's the argument.
They're so mad about William Jackson shutting down Antonio Brown that one time, man. Mm-hmm. That they were like, you know what? We're gonna trade our entire draft to go get a linebacker. And we're going to spend so much capital to get a linebacker. You look at Professional Football Focus.
The best linebacker in the draft when they desperately needed a linebacker.
Yeah, he's a linebacker, bro. We're going to talk a little bit about Joe Burrow and the Bengals' future here in the second half of the show.
Just one quick thing. Okay. Devin Bush's father, obviously Devin Bush Sr., I'm a huge Florida State fan, so I know his father very well. I've talked with him for years. And that night, I was like, what's going on? What do you think? He's like, he's going 10. He's either going to Colorado, or he's like, Jeff, I know what you cover right now. It's not looking good for you, bro. And Devin Bush was a darling of mine through that draft process. And it was like 10 minutes. It was like 10 hours before. And he's like, oh, Jeff, this ain't going to be good for you, man. It ain't going to be good for you. And I was like, you realize I want your son to tear it up 14 games a season. But for two games a year, I hope your son goes goose eggs.
It'll be fun to watch that future. Joe, you want to get a point in here, and then we're going to talk about the future in the second half of the show.
Just real quick, the William Jackson pick wasn't to spite the Steelers. No. William Jackson was really, really good. I mean, you got to think of those two first-round corners you mentioned, Drake Kirkpatrick, Darqueze Dennard. Jackson was better than them as soon as he stepped on the field.
Pac-Man,
no doubt. Jones was also first. So I'm sorry, there were three first-round cornerbacks on that roster at the time.
That's right. But like the Steelers, the Bengals can't draft linebackers. So everyone knew the Bengals needed a linebacker.
Draft linebackers? They drafted
hang on. Let me finish.
Bunch of regions had 11 and a half.
He ain't a linebacker. Anyways, TJ Watt's not a linebacker. Anyways, point being, the Bengals can't draft linebackers, everyone knew they wanted one last year at 11, right?
So that's why we. Factory of linebackers.
Sentence.
I'm sorry, that was Steelers, a bad statement.
Because I haven't finished yet. The Steelers can't draft defensive backs, so everyone knew the Steelers were going to draft a defensive back that year, and when the Bengals took Jax, everyone said, "Oh, they did it for the Steelers." Just that's how we're seeing it for the Devin Bush pick, because the Bengals can't pick linebackers.
Also, we didn't care. We were past Devin Bush at that point. Because
I'm sure you were.
No, so here's how we talked ourselves out of it: is positional value. And every time we went through Mock Draft Monday last year, we're sitting there thinking, man, are we really spending? We did a couple times. Are we really spending a top 11 pick on a linebacker? And we didn't. And that's kind of the way it ended up shaking out. But What Joel meant there by the Steelers can't draft linebackers, by the way, there's this conflation about the linebacker position that edge rushers count as linebackers, and we don't talk when we talk about linebackers, we're talking about off-ball linebackers. That's what we mean there. There's your clarification. James Harrison, TJ Watt don't count. We're going to talk about the Bengals' future. Why we're going to get people's takes on Joe Burrow here in just a minute.
Big news for the Bengals. Big story for the Bengals this offseason is obviously Joe Burrow, that number one pick. We're sold. I mean, all keys are turned. We're ready to go with this as long as the national media will stay out of it for a little bit. But I want to get your guys' take, the rest of the division take, and we'll start with Kevin. You know, what are your feelings on Joe Burrow? Is there any bit of, man, I think he's really good, a little bit of fear here that the Bengals could be, you know, stepping up to the plate with these other two teams in the division that have drafted their quarterbacks recently?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how competitive this division is going to get, and I think with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, it's a home run. And I believe that, you know, with Andy Dalton's time coming to a close and there seems to be, you know, a new thing with having Zach Taylor, the QB guru there. I mean, really in all aspects of this, I do think that it's a home run for the Bengals. And when you look at Joe Burrow and just what he brought to the table last season for LSU, he's extremely accurate. He has so much timing on his throws and absolutely excellent timing. He has field vision. He's mobile and surprisingly mobile. You look at Joe Burrow and you see a pretty good athlete, but you don't, you know, the mobility that he has, it threw me off at times because I'm like, wow, this is almost, you know, some of his runs were almost, I'm not going to say Lamar Jackson-esque, but I'll say pretty up there. He can throw in rhythm and he's difficult to sack going along with that mobility. I mean, Joe Burrow checks all the boxes for me as a quarterback. Surefire number one overall pick, of course, if you need the quarterback. Other teams, if they had that pick, you know, might say, all right, we're going to go with Chase Young here, another perennial talent. And that's where you have to decide, where is your need at? Is it at quarterback or is it on the defensive side of the ball? For the Bengals, it's obviously at quarterback. And you mentioned the Ravens having Lamar Jackson, the Browns having Baker Mayfield. The Steelers are most likely going to get another quarterback in the next few drafts here. At least that's my opinion. So with the Bengals, it's almost, well, all right, we want to get one of our own guys here to kind of throw into the mix with Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. There's really not a lot of weakness in his game to me right now. Obviously, he's a little bit older than the rest of the quarterbacks here. I mean, Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson at this point, and he will always be older than Lamar Jackson. So it's really the only thing I can really say is a concern for me about Joe Burrow is his arm strength. There's a little bit of limit on there, but other than that, he's a great leader. He's a guy who I think really could turn this Bengals franchise around. And of course, the national media is getting their hand in it here saying, oh, they're going to trade out of it. They're going to trade out of it. I really don't think they should.
So I think that those are some fair points. The age is a question. 24-year-old quarterbacks coming out usually are flags, one-year production, often a flag. Arm strength can be a flag depending on the rest of the resume. I think that there's enough we've talked about on our own show that we're not really going to dive into those criticisms. I think there's just enough on the rest of the tape, enough on his resume character-wise that you don't have to question those things. There's answers to all those questions, right? But what about the question about the amount of talent he had around him at LSU? That's another common refrain. The easy answer is, well, look, he's playing in the SEC. Everybody's good. But Jeff, you could probably speak to the quality of weapons for a quarterback as the Browns go out and get Odell Beckham Jr., put him around. Who's your quarterback? What's his name? Baker Mayfield.
We're not even talking about that right now with everything that's going on. But what you look at with, you know, and you try to equate with what Joe Burrow was successful with, you know, who's going to play the roles? You look at Jordan, obviously Jefferson, who's going to be, look, there's a ton of way you can get him to Cincinnati. That'd be fantastic. But that's where Boyd comes in. And over the last couple of years, and we've talked about it, it's like, wow, this guy's really, and wherever the AJ Green thing goes, and look, AJ Green is a fantastic player, has been, but he's almost kind of like a Kaiser Sose for Kevin, for me, and for Chris. We've never really seen AJ Green play against our teams over the last couple of years. And it sucks because AJ Green is a fantastic player. So however that works out, it's going to be interesting. And AJ Green has absolutely been the good soldier throughout his entire time there. But you try to equate it to what Joe Burrow was successful with. Boyd playing that Jefferson role, nasty footwork, running stuff inside, outside, breaking off linebackers, obviously coming in under safeties on routes. That's something that probably will work well for Burrow. John Ross. Chase is fantastic. If he were in the 2020 draft, he'd maybe be wide receiver one, wide receiver two. But John Ross, he's, you know, where he became like this red zone threat was kind of weird. You need him to blow the top off of things. The fact that Joe Mixon is a really good receiver out of the backfield, you look at what helped him at LSU and, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Yeah, I mean, you see this starting to line up where there's some pieces that'll work out for Joe Burrow here. And obviously they're going to bring more in. And then you just look at what Joe Burrow did. I mean, the player. And as the situations grew, he just grew with it. And, you know, LSU, not a lot of people thought it was going to lead to a national championship season. Just the make of the kid and, you know, just the way he handled it all. And whether it was, you know, the running ability when it was needed. And, look, it was good. It's not great. You know, kind of similar to Andy Dalton. Look, if you're going to give it to me, I'm going to take it. You pair that with Joe Mixon, who's already established in the NFL. It's a nice blend. It really is. You know, Pittsburgh may be the odd one looking out here because it's like, you know, Ben's like the old man on the barbecue while all the young kids are messing around. Give me the ball. I'm going to throw it around a couple times where it's Baker, where it's Lamar, and it's about to be Joe Burrow. I think it sets up well. Obviously, Jonah Williams is going to come in here, you know, and you know, whether he's a tackle, whether he's a guard, who cares? Even if he's inside, you're getting another good player, you know, on that offensive line. It starts to shape up a little bit better. Joe Burrow's coming into a really nice situation here. Question is whether or not, you know, they can get enough on the defensive side of the ball. And this is one thing I keep preaching to people. As much as they got on the Browns defense last year, look, guys, I mean, the Ravens have maybe set the standard. Look, you need to be putting up 28, close to 30 points a week. So worry about the offense first. Look at Kansas City. What all that they did, put everything on offense. What do they hope for the defense? They hope that they were at least knowing each other and working together week in, week out. But the key to it all is scoring some damn points. And there's pieces in place. You have Tate. Whether the A.J. Green thing happens or not, you still have Boyd, Ross, Tate, and Mixon. That's a nice blend for any rookie quarterback to walk into.
Yeah, I agree. Next one up is for Steelers and Chris. Chris, are you kind of feeling like with these other teams having their young franchise quarterbacks, you know, if that goes that way with the Bengals taking Burrow, you feel like the Steelers are falling behind a little bit? Any concern, any worry from you guys?
I mean, as far as the future, of course, because you're looking at, you know, I believe Lamar Jackson is one of the best quarterbacks. I liked him in his draft. I thought him and Josh Allen were my 1A, 1B guys of his draft class. And when the Steelers passed on him for Terrell Edmonds, I was like, I think that's a mistake. And considering he's the MVP and Terrell Edmonds is still developing, I think that kind of proved my point. You know, looking at – I don't believe in Baker Mayfield. He says he doesn't care what people think anymore, but he's come out and saying that to people. I'm just kind of like, eh. But Joe Burrow, I love everything I read about that guy. When I watch him play, he sees pressure developing in front of him, and he still knows where his offense is. He still knows what defenses are trying to do. He keeps his head up. He keeps it pointed downfield. He's looking and processing. That's what I find the most dangerous. I'm not too concerned about his arm. If I'm evaluating him as a coach or as a scout, I'm not too concerned about his arm. I want to see what he's doing as a play is developing. And that part, if I'm a defensive coordinator planning to face that guy, that's what concerns me, because if he can dodge the pressure that I throw at him and still keep his head up like that, that's good. That's the dangerous part of him. And that's what I really like about Joe Burrow. But all those things considered, you know, I'm still concerned about the Bengals as an organization. I know that they got Zach Taylor and it's a new coach and all that, but too many times I've just heard this song and dance about, oh, things are going to be different. And, you know, we got Carson Palmer and then we got Andy Dalton and just all those things. Carson Palmer was the golden boy and that never panned out. You know, I'm really excited about Joe Burrow in the NFL. I think he has the potential to be great and maybe the best quarterback in the league, you know, next to Patrick Mahomes. But I'm not sold that the Bengals are going to maximize his talent. I really like Tyler Boyd. He's Pittsburgh's own from Clareton. That guy's been a bad man for a long time. Am I concerned about where the Steelers may be going? Yes, certainly in years. But I also think it may be a little premature. Like they had I think it was Chris Canty on ESPN or Fox Sports 1 or whatever was talking about Ben Roethlisberger, that Steelers need to get rid of him now. I don't think Ben's done just yet. I think it'd be silly to ask him to throw for 5,000 yards again. But as far as the next year and maybe 2 years, I think the Steelers will be fine as far as competitive-wise. But the Steelers do need to find the answer quarterback. Mason Rudolph didn't look like that this year. Give him another year, see how he does, in fill-in spots. But I do think they need to find an answer at some point that is going to definitively be a franchise quarterback, or at least be the guy that can not lose you the games and let your defense and your running game do the most of the work, and then you come in the end and kind of save the day at the last minute. Because that's honestly what Ben did when he won his Super Bowls. He wasn't the driving force. You go back and look at Super Bowl 43. He was not a good quarterback until the last drive of the game. And you look at Super Bowl 40. He was horrible. They won in spite of him. I don't think they necessarily need the best quarterback in the league or anything to win those games. I just think that they need someone that can call an offense, can recognize defenses, and make sure that they're staying on point. Devin Hodges and Mason Rudolph were not doing that this year, and that was a huge problem with how they produce. So they need to find an answer soon. But I think Ben, if all is to be believed, that his elbow is on point, that he's everything that we're hearing from his doctors, and that he's on schedule to be back, he'll be fine this year. But yes, in the next 3-4 years, I think there is definitely a concern in Pittsburgh of what's coming after Ben.
I think my concern looking to the future for Pittsburgh is that they get a guy falling like Jordan Love and can sit him and develop him for 2 years. That's really the only thing. That kind of pick in the second, third round, if one of these guys falls, and I don't think Jordan Love will. I think that somebody's going to get in love with the arm and the 2018 tape and give him a chance.
No, I agree. I think a team like the Colts may be like, we're missing Andrew Luck. Let's go get a guy that could become the star for them, right? I think it'd be silly for teams to pass on the potential of Love. I like Jordan Love and his capabilities. Would I spend a first-round pick if I see a glaring need on a team and I can address? I think this year in the draft has a lot of potential. I see guys at wide receiver that are really exciting. I think there's a lot of offensive linemen that could really add to a unit that if I pass on that, I think they might come back to bite me. But certainly, I think there's a lot of potential for that. A lot of Steelers fans, and I'll shout out to the Locked On Steelers Nation that always hits me up. A lot of people ask me about Jalen Hurts. I like Jalen Hurts as a prospect, but would I spend a second-round pick on him if I'm the Steelers? And I have to say no, because I think the priority right now is beefing up the run game. And, if an offensive lineman doesn't fall to the second round that you're interested in at the 49th pick, I think that absolutely you're going to have a shot at one of those top three backs, either Swift, which Joe Marino mocked into the Steelers. I don't think Swift's going to get that far. But Dobbins – Taylor, you got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you got Zach Moss. I think any of those guys in the first round could really boost what they're trying to do in the ground game. And that's what's going to – they need to boost the ground. If they can run the ball and not force Ben Roethlisberger to chuck the ball all the time, that's where they find their strength as a team. But as far as the Bengals go, if they're able to build around Burrow, give him some weapons and protect him, don't let him get beat up in his rookie year, and don't let that, because there were just times especially Andy Dalton last year, you just saw him just like the frustration on his face with how much pressure he was facing just day in and day out sometimes. You don't want that for your young quarterback, even though I know he's 24 and he's older than Lamar Jackson. You don't want him coming into the league dealing with that. Protect him, invest around that, and see how Zach Taylor does build around your quarterback, because that's what you brought Taylor for, was to be the quarterback whisperer. I know everyone talks to Sean McVay as God around the NFL, but I'm still skeptical about how the Bengals handle their organization as a whole. I'm not sold that they're going to be fixing everything just because they have another first overall pick.
The Bengals haven't picked first overall since Carson Palmer, and I was looking actually because people were saying, the Bengals are going to pick first overall again next year. Why don't they just wait and take Trevor Lawrence. And the last time a team picked back-to-back overall was Cleveland. And before that, you have to go 20 years for a team picking back-to-back first overall. It doesn't happen that often. That isn't to take a shot at Jeff's Browns. It's just saying.
I'm about to say, Jeff, you just going to sit there and
thanks, guys.
Well, that's not the point. The point is you take your quarterback when you can take your quarterback. It's rare, right? So that's all I'm getting at there. I'm hearing a little bit of fear in your voice. I'm hearing some rationalization happening by my peers. And yeah, you hold up the beer in your hand. That's going to do it for this episode of the AFC
guys,
North Ultimate
guys,
Crossover as Jeff tries to get in the last word here.
No, not at all. Not at all. Before we actually put a bow on this, for you and for Joe, I have two questions, and these are probably really predominant for the Bengals. One, is AJ Green a Bengal in 2020? Two, are you guys, do you really have a read yet on Zach Taylor after 2-14 season?
I'll go number one. You go number two, Joe.
Okay, you got the easy one then.
Yeah. AJ Green is a Bengal unless they get a trade offer after they franchise tag him that they can't refuse. Tyler Dragon, who's the beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer, has reported numerous times that the Bengals are committed to at least franchise tagging AJ Green while they try to work on a long-term deal. But the other beat writer, Paul Dana, well, there's more than just two, but another beat writer, Paul Dana Jr., who's on The Athletic, has said the Bengals are, they don't want to do the long-term deal because they're worried about the injury. So will he be a Bengal in 2020? They're going to franchise tag him. So, and he's going to play under the franchise tag. He won't be happy about it, but he said he would. And so unless they get a trade offer that they feel is adequate, he will be a Bengal in 2020. Absolutely.
And as for Zach Taylor, it's hard to get a read on him because usually when you see new coaches come in, after 16 years of Marvin Lewis, new coaches would come in and they would destroy the entire roster, right, and bring in their own guys and start to establish their team going forward. And you know it'd be some sort of rebuild after such a long tenure from that coach. Instead, that didn't happen. That's not how the Bengals roll. You know, they're just going to add a couple players and keep going from there. And so I think it took 8 weeks to even figure out what he had on this roster, where they could succeed, what position to put them in. And it was a terrible 8 weeks to watch of watching guys in the wrong position or doing things that, like, you know, if you've been watching the guy for 7 years, like, why are they telling him to play man in this situation? Why are they running him on these type of routes? That's not, you know, what he's been doing. But they're new players for Zach Taylor. And then something happened at the bye week, and they played so much better. And I know they only won two of those games over the second half. But just hearing the players respond and say that, no, he didn't lose the locker room. You know, everything he was saying and preaching did come true as it went on in the second half of the year. And, yes, they only won two games. They lost eight games within one score. So, I mean, those are usually coin flips. They should have probably been a 6-10 team just based on their talent. But I think the major concern for me was that he turned Andy Dalton into the worst version of himself. And anytime you got a coach that makes the quarterback either look really good or really bad, you kind of, obviously you want the guy who's going to make your quarterback look really good. And that's a concern. Like, what if he's just not a great quarterback whisperer? What if he's just not that kind of guy and you put a number one pick with him and all of a sudden Joe Burrow is not playing up to that potential because of Zach Taylor? So no, it's hard to have a read right now. But those are just the little things that stuck out after 1 year.
So with that,
okay.
Jeff, thank you for the good questions for everyone to hear. As everyone's listening to this AFC North Ultimate Crossover episode, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the Browns. We'll be back Thursday to just wrap things up. We'll have a little bit of fun with it. Actually, that's going to be on Friday. Sorry. So tomorrow, Browns, Friday, wrapping up. Look
best
forward
for
to
last.
Those episodes. Jeff, last word here for Jeff. The Browns is the best day. We're obviously going to disagree with that here at the Locked On Bengals podcast, but that is going to do it for us. We'll be back the next couple of days to finish up this AFC North crossover week.